way, McGraw-Hill, you know who started that? Ghislaine Maxwell's dad. Yeah. Robert Maxwell owns, you know, every single textbook we got as a kid came from a Mossad agent.
Oh my fucking
God.
Yeah.
Not my Texas history book. not all 11 of them.
Okay, who is McGraw-Hill?
They made all the textbooks, right? You ever look at your textbook?
When you were a little kid, it was made by McGraw-Hill.
Oh, that's the publisher.
That's the publisher.
Oh my God.
That was apparently founded by Jeffrey Epstein's girlfriend's dad.
This is how evil the Epsteins were. Not only were they kids, they were also giving them homework.
Yes.
It's like, damn, bro.
That's messed up.
That's crazy.
Big ass books,
yeah,
too.
I know, right?
Carry these around in your backpack.
You
Man.
Had to cover the book yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You had to give it its own yarmulke.
Yes. Oh my God, dude.
We did.
That was a thing. We had to cover our own books. They wanted us to cover it up so you couldn't see who made it.
I wonder what company owns the book cover.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The company that takes all the school pictures.
No,
you're right. That's like big news right now.
Yeah.
Are you schools this year are canceling their school pictures because of this connection?
Yeah, the company is heavily connected to Epstein.
So they've been sending our photos over there too?
Probably. That's
just picking us out. Just picking us out of the school yearbook.
They have a draft board, Mel Kiper style, of every picture of every kid in America.
Yeah,
they're just sitting there.
Yeah, like a fantasy draft.
I am never making fun of a homeschool kid again.
What do you got there, Dylan? Yeah, interesting, huh? All U.S. textbooks, probably other countries as well, just happened to be published by Robert Maxwell's publishing company, Jeffrey Epstein's girlfriend's father, Mossad. All U.S. textbooks, science books, preschool books, grade school books, all printed by Mossad. And not only that, but all of the high school yearbooks with the pictures of the children. It's kind of like a catalog for them, isn't it? Unbelievable. Just how deep the deception goes. This reality that we're in, just how programmed people are. How all this has been so predictable. It's quite amazing, really, like so many people, myself included, for decades have been saying how we're heading into transhumanism. Every single law they put in place is just designed to take away more of your rights. None of it is to protect you, and it's all to lead you into this digital prison. All the sci-fi movies of the 60s, and you know, incredible, really, when you look at it. And I don't think any of it's new. I've said to you before, I don't think any of the technology we're using is new. I think that the legends of the scrying mirrors, all this sort of stuff, it all ties into what we're seeing now. Even movies, you know, 2000... and one, A Space Odyssey. Remembering that as well. Like I've often said to you about the scrying mirrors, the black mirrors that bring you all the knowledge, everything you need to know about the future and the past, the legends of all this sort of stuff. If you look at 2001, A Space Odyssey, and remember there was the monkeys. And they were getting along fine, they were just in their little tribal situations until that black monolith appeared and started giving them all this knowledge. And they learned how to make a club and beat each other up and do all sorts of stuff like that. It all came from this black obelisk, kind of like a black mirror. Crazy. They put all of this stuff in the movies to let you know what's going on. And it's ancient, I think. Like even the advent of AI, I don't think any of this is new. I don't think any of the technology we're using is new. I think if it was new, the legends of the scrying mirrors wouldn't exist. The one thing they've got to try to do is make it look like a natural progression. You know, the Industrial Revolution, and we invented the television and the radio and all this sort of crap, and then we merge it all together, and suddenly we're walking around with cell phones, stuff that'll fit in our pocket that you couldn't fit in a 10-story MIT building 50, 60 years ago. Now it's the size of a cell phone. You'll put it in your back pocket, and everybody carries it. And the trick has been to get people dependent upon these things and to separate them from the real world. But you can only do that if you turn the world on the cell phone into something close to the real world. Like the AI and stuff that you see now, it's insane. Like the level of quality that you're getting from AI and the realism, it's incredible. You see videos of dragons flying across the sky now. You see videos of battles between horses and crocodiles and just crazy stuff, you know, and it all looks real. I mean, you know it's not, but it all looks real. And even stuff that's obvious animation has that realistic tinge to it now. Like, for example, I wanted to see what all the hype was about, so I checked out The Odyssey. I didn't go and see it. There's other ways of watching it. So I used one of the other methods of watching it. And I watched a really good quality copy of the new Odyssey film that's come out. And it was honestly, I think it was pretty terrible. I'm a big fan of Greek mythology. They missed out 90% of the story. But even looking at that, after I finished watching it, I was just on YouTube and I saw a quick video. It was like 15 minutes. And it had something like what Christopher Nolan didn't show you in The Odyssey, something like that. And it was only 15 minutes long, but it was actually more informative than Chris Nolan's version. Like, in 15 minutes, they covered more of the story than what Christopher Nolan did in the whole three-hour saga that he puts you through. Doesn't give you any of the backstory or anything. But even the realism and... I mean, it's obviously animated, sure. It's obviously AI. But it's getting to the point that you won't need actors, you won't need Hollywood, you won't need any of this stuff anymore. It's all been about leading you into this new reality, this augmented reality. And you look at what this guy kind of just released with this little 15-minute version of what Christopher Nolan won't show you in The Odyssey. To be able to have done that in the last like week or so, because the film's only been out for a week or 2 weeks or something, I don't know, it hasn't been out very long, hasn't been released for very long. To be able to have done that in a matter of a couple of weeks of that quality, I mean, imagine what you're going to be able to do soon. And they want everybody to be able to do this. They want you to be able to pick any topic and just go and create your own film about it. That way you're not going to need Hollywood, you're not going to need any of their stuff, you're going to be just locked in your little bubble doing it on your own, sharing your own work with your friends, creating your own movies, creating your own completely fictitious, fabricated realities on your own, and then inviting your friends in to participate. But you won't even know if these are real friends, you won't even know if these are real people. So you'd just be lying in your pod creating this completely fabricated world. I mean, you could probably create a game like the Odyssey, you could put Homer's poem into the AI and get it to construct for you a multi-level game following the same plot as the Odyssey, and you play Odysseus and be in your virtual reality suit and all this sort of stuff, and you could get your own friends in there even writing side plots and all sorts of stuff. You'd be lost in this virtual world and not even know what's going on in the real world. And when you look at that, you've got to wonder, are they creating this world around you to drag you into it like that? Or are they simply creating a believable scenario to show you how it was done? Because that's the thing, if they can do this, they will do it, which means they already have. For all of this stuff to be going on, the scrying mirrors, all of this stuff, for this to be so ancient, whoa, these cicadas, for this to be so ancient and so controlling and so all-encompassing, how immersed are we in a virtual reality already? This is a question I've been asking right back since 2008, since my first film, because all of this is so predictable. Like, we know exactly where they're going and we know exactly what they're trying to do. And I've said before, a lot of what I think they're doing is they're growing souls and harvesting souls. They want that energy. They want that loose energy. But it's like human consciousness is caught in a time loop, a repeating time loop, which just keeps playing itself out. We have the opportunity to escape the loop, but it can only be done by self-realization. No stake in the outcome of this experience. The only thing you really need to do in this experience is make it through the experience with your soul intact. If you can act in integrity in all that you do, do what you do for non-selfish reasons, do what you do because it needs to be done. Don't worry about trying to profit from other people. And money's an interesting thing, folks. You know, a lot of people think I have this karma with money. I think Jeff thinks that I have this weird karma, this weird blockage with money, that I don't like money or something like that. It isn't a matter of that. It's a matter that money gets in the way of creativity. Money is there to create scarcity. Money is what keeps you enslaved because you need to pay to be alive. I don't believe we used to live in societies where we all used to have to pay to be alive. When you look at all the ancient structures, some of the incredible buildings out of Europe and all around the world, I don't believe that these places were constructed by people who were being paid by the hour. They wouldn't have constructed such beautiful things. They constructed things of such great beauty because they loved to create. When you start paying someone to create and do what they love, they kind of lose their creative input into it. It doesn't become about creation anymore, it becomes about money. And they've actually done experiments to prove that this is what happens.
In 1973, psychologists paid a group of children to draw. Within weeks, the children who loved drawing stopped. And what those researchers discovered didn't just explain why kids stopped playing. It explains why you wake up dreading the thing that used to make you feel alive. Here's what happened. Researchers took children who genuinely loved drawing, kids who would choose it over every other activity, and split them into groups. One group got a reward every time they drew. A gold star, a certificate. The other group, nothing. Just drew because they wanted to. 2 weeks later, the rewarded children stopped drawing on their own, completely. The kids who were never paid, still drawing, still obsessed. The researchers called it the over-justification effect. The moment your brain receives an external reward for something it already loved, it overwrites the internal motivation. Your brain goes, oh, I'm not doing this because I love it. I'm doing this because I get paid. This is exactly what happens when you monetize your passion. The algorithm, the revenue, the metrics, they become the new reason. And your brain quietly deletes the old one. You don't burn out because you worked too hard. You burn out because your brain replaced why you started. So the next time someone tells you to monetize what you love, ask yourself, can you afford to lose the reason you loved it in the first place?
Yeah, so they lose their creativity. And I'm not saying people shouldn't do what they love, and I'm not saying people shouldn't create. Look, it's a really weird area to get into with people. I'm just trying to help people understand that there is a higher harmonic than money. I mean, sure, we all need money, don't get me wrong. We're in a situation where we need money in order to pay to be alive, because that's the setup here. But I firmly believe that if your heart is in the right spot, the money will come to you. It may be just enough for you to get by and continue doing what you're doing, but it will happen. If you act in integrity, the universe provides integrity back to you. That's the way it works. That's the way I've lived my life for years. I always just seem to sort of land in the right place at the right time, meet the right people, and end up doing the right thing. And I don't really plan any of it. Sure, I make vague plans. You know, I'm going to go here and catch up with these people. But then stuff happens on the way. And I end up doing all sorts of stuff that I never planned, which is why I've done so much stuff, because I never plan anything. I just kind of go with the flow. And I think a lot of that is how to get through the system. See, everything that's coming online, like the whole surveillance grid, which is failing miserably in a lot of ways, like they're really pushing for it to happen. The data centers, and incidentally, the data centers, like these places are using up massive amounts of electricity. Sure, we know that. They're also using up massive amounts of water, but it would appear they don't even actually need to be using water for the cooling systems in these data centers. So what's it really all about? I've speculated on previous shows that I think they're trying to destroy the water. They're trying to damage the molecular structure, the energetic structure of the water. I've talked to you before about water clusters. Everything water witnesses or experiences, it remembers in water clusters. I've speculated before, I've said, like, when you're born, you are made from a mixture of the waters of your parents, your mother and your father. When those waters came together and fertilized the egg, the sperm that became you, then that is a mixture of the waters of your parents. And the waters of your parents contain the waters of all of their ancestors. And when we die, generally, our body goes back to the ground. And the water goes back to the groundwater, it becomes part of the earth again. It becomes part of the collective RAM drive of the earth. And water has memory, and everything that water has ever experienced, so therefore every experience that's ever happened on earth, is encoded in the water. I've speculated that if you had higher senses online and you could access the RAM drive of the water on the earth, you would have access to most of the information and most of history and most of everything that's ever happened on the earth. Sorry about the cicadas, folks. I seem to come out this time of day. It's a little weird at the moment. Like, it's cloudy, so when the clouds come over, the cicadas come out. The electricity's off at the moment as well, which is a little strange. But so it went off about an hour ago. So I'm hoping I'm going to be able to get home, actually record this video tonight, or edit this video tonight and get it posted. But I've speculated so many times that, you know, the RAM drive of the earth is the water. So a lot of what I think they're trying to do with these data centers is destroy that memory. Whatever it is they're putting the water through in these data centers, I mean, how are they affecting it? What energy are they putting into it? And these data centers are all about control, folks. They're all about the whole robot system they want to bring out. So they want to replace humankind. I mean, look what they're doing in Western countries at the moment. They're replacing all of our populations with Middle Easterners, selling it to the world as a Muslim invasion. It isn't. It's just Middle Eastern refugees are being brought into your country. They're not Muslim, they're not Christian, they're not anything. They're just dysfunctional people who spent the last 80 years living in war zones, who have no concept of what it's like to live in an actual society. And they're bringing them into all of our countries in order to destroy our countries, basically. But then, once they're in there, these people are pretty useless. They're not going to be getting them to build society or doing any of this sort of stuff. They're bringing them in to destroy society, and they'll replace them. Like, once they've replaced the white people and replaced Western countries with all this migrant invasion, they'll replace all of those people with robots. I mean, they're all lawbreakers and they're all dysfunctional, so they'll bring in robot dogs and robot police and all sorts of shit to deal with them. And then they'll basically just have their little people farm. They'll be growing enough children, getting them from Ukraine and wherever they want. And like, they're really pushing it in Ukraine. Most of the porn industry, a lot of underground porn is used from trafficked Ukrainian and Russian women from that part of Eastern Europe, very attractive women there. So they like to steal them and use them in porn. And a lot of them like go to Israel, they go to Turkey. They think they're getting jobs as nannies and stuff like that. They're going to be making money, sending it home to their families. They get to these places, their passports get taken, they get trapped in a brothel, and that's what they do with them. There was one Israeli rabbi saying that there's a brothel in every center block in Tel Aviv, mostly full of Ukrainian women.
Thousands of Ukrainian girls was imported to Israel to work in prostitutions. In every block you have an apartment of Russian prostitute. We call it Russian because we do not know to tell the difference between Russian and Ukraine. They both look alike and they both speak Russian. We don't know to tell the difference. I guess the Russians, if they hear it. So in other words, for us, the Israelis, we don't really know the difference. We don't know. They published in Ukraine, if you would like to come in and work in Israel in cleaning or au pair, raising, watching children, all kinds of jobs like this, you're going to make $4,000 a month. Wow. $4,000 in Ukraine? Better than a lawyer. It's a lot of money. So right away they arrived to Israel, and as soon as they arrived, these gangsters, when some of them themselves are Russian or Ukrainians, they do it for their own people. And they take their passport and say, give us your passport, we need to make you the visa and the papers, and that's it. From the minute they took their passport, they take them to some place, they bury them in a basement for 20 years. They don't see the daylight. They put these guys with guns, and they force them to be slaves over there. Some of them are married. They only came for 2-3 months to make. They thought maybe they're gonna come, bring back $10,000, and they can live 2 years after that. And their husband and wife and their children do not know where she disappeared. And that's.
So anyway, that's what they do. So now they've brought all of this pornography online in Ukraine as well. See, they've taken all the men, pushed all the men to the front to get them killed. They're still just stealing men off the street, sending them to the Russian front just to be killed off. And they're replacing them with Jews. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews arriving in Ukraine, setting up enclaves. Happening all over the world, actually, folks. They're setting up enclaves, I've said before, in Pisac. Recently, Norway dropped all trade with Israel. Within 2 days, there were forest fires in Norway. Interesting how that works. Don't know if Jews are involved, but it wouldn't surprise me. It seems to be the way they do things. I mean, they burn down Patagonia, then buy the land up. There's huge enclaves in Pisac in Peru. Suddenly there's forest fires near Machu Picchu. You got to understand their role in any country that they go into is to destroy the idols. So you can imagine what they're going to do in Sacred Valley in Peru. They've been kicked out of Malaysia. No Israeli passports will be allowed into Malaysia. They've apparently been going in there setting up little enclaves in secret, and the government's found out about this, and so it has now banned all Israelis. Israeli tourists are being banned all over the world. Actually, there's also Benjamin Netanyahu, who is of course wanted for war crimes, a warrant out on him from the International Criminal Court for war crimes and genocide. He is said to be visiting New York soon, and the new mayor of New York, what's his name, Zohar or Zoron or something, Mumandi or something like that, I can't remember his name, but he said he will arrest Netanyahu if he comes to New York. Trump, of course, has said, no, this is ridiculous and no one will be arresting Netanyahu, but the mayor of New York says, yeah, he will.
Benjamin Netanyahu is a war criminal, the architect of a horrific genocide against the Palestinian people. He is responsible for the killing of more than 73,000 people, for the maiming of tens of thousands of children, as those who survive undergo amputation without anesthesia, for the targeting of neonatal hospitals and maternity care centers, denying newborns even the chance to live, for the countless people he starved as he blocked food and humanitarian aid from reaching them, for the gunning down of hundreds of aid workers and journalists. And just last month, the UN confirmed that Palestinian children continue to be deliberately targeted and killed by Israeli armed forces, more than 8 months after the so-called ceasefire. The list goes on and on, all as we, as Americans, pay for the bombs that do the killing. There is a reason the International Criminal Court issued a warrant for his arrest. As human beings, we have spent generations building a shared understanding that there are crimes so grave they offend all of humanity. Anyone, with their eyes, with their heart, with their conscience, should recognize the devastation he has wrought and understand that he belongs before a court of law. As I've said, I agree with the ICC that Benjamin Netanyahu should be arrested and tried for his crimes, as I do for anyone else charged by the ICC. My administration has reviewed every avenue available under applicable law to determine whether New York City could execute the International Criminal Court's arrest warrant if Benjamin Netanyahu came here. It is clear that we do not have the independent legal authority to enforce this warrant. The federal government, however, does, and I call on them to join the ICC and execute this warrant. And I want to be equally clear. Benjamin Netanyahu is not welcome in New York City, nor is any other war criminal at large. While we cannot end the genocide on our own, we can decide whether our silence will become another weapon, and we can examine every tool we have to defend the humanity and dignity of all people. That is my commitment to you.
I can't see it happening, but it would be great if that did happen, because it should happen. He is a wanted war criminal and he should be arrested as soon as he steps foot outside of Israel, and he should be taken to the criminal court in The Hague to face charges for war crimes, along with Ben-Gvir. Ben-Gvir is one of the most evil men on earth. And what these people have done to Gaza is absolutely reprehensible. It's genocide, absolutely genocide. There's been all talk of, you know, Trump's Gaza Lago and the all these agreements they were making to rebuild Gaza and all that sort of stuff. All of this has been scrapped, and now they're just saying they're going to put them into this temporary housing, which is simply concentration camps. And it's absolutely disgusting, but this is the plan for Gaza. So they're not going to do anything to fix that. They're still annexing Lebanon and blah, blah, blah. It's horrendous. So yeah, Netanyahu should absolutely be arrested for war crimes, and it's going to be interesting to see if that happens. Well, like I said, I can't see that it will happen. But Ben-Gvir as well, like I was saying, Ben-Gvir is one of the most evil men on earth. Like, he's even worse than Netanyahu. Ben-Gavir and that other little dweeb, Beelzebub smoker dick, absolutely hideous human beings. And Ben-Gavir is the head of the police force. And to think that a sadist like Ben-Gavir is actually head of the police force. Guy walks around with a little golden noose on his collar because he's brought in the death penalty for Palestinians. The other day he said in a public speech that the Palestinian prisoners piss themselves and start crying as soon as they see us now. And this is very good, and that whatever the guards are doing, they need to keep this treatment up to these people. And after he finished, he was greeted with thunderous applause from the room. It's absolutely sick. And this is Israeli mentality. See, it isn't just the government. This is the people as well. And this is why it's so dangerous with Israel setting up all these enclaves all over the world. I mean, they go in and they just take over. The way Israelis operate is they just go in and they do whatever they want until they're told to stop. It doesn't matter what local laws are. If you have local laws, well, they don't care. They'll just do what they do until they're told not to do that. It's like, for an example, like if you have a line of 50 people, 100 people to go into a nightclub, an Israeli comes along, they'll just walk straight up to the front and just walk in. And if the guard doesn't stop them, then they'll just say it's okay. And once they're in there, they'll just do whatever they want. They'll drink everybody's drinks. They'll just treat the place like it's theirs and everybody else is subservient to them until they're told to stop. That's just the way they operate. They push the boundaries to see if there are any boundaries. There was a friend of mine who was working for a Jewish family in Australia, working as a groundsman on their property. And he was working regular hours and doing regular jobs of the property. Suddenly they kept giving him more work to do, just more work. And he's ended up, he's doing an extra 5 or 10 hours work a week and like about 5 or 6 more jobs than he was originally assigned to do. And he stopped them one day and said, well, what's going on? I mean, now I'm suddenly doing all this other stuff. And they said, well, yeah, we decided about a month ago that we don't really need you anymore. And so we just thought we'll just keep giving you work until it becomes too much for you and you leave. Because we don't want to sack you, because if we sack you, then we've got to pay severance pay. We just keep piling on the work until you go. You can stay here as long as you want, but you know, we're just going to keep giving you more work. And they were quite open about this is what we're going to do, you know. And so he had no choice. He had to leave without severance pay. And then he's got a black mark against his name on the job employment board or whatever because he quit his last job, you know. So this is just the way they work. And this is the way they work in all countries. And they will come in there. They will use the holohoax, which is completely fraudulent and fictitious, to gain sympathy in your community. And then they will position themselves that they can get voted for on the local council. Once they've got positions on the local council, and you can't stop them because if you do, you're anti-Semitic. Once they've got positions on the local council, then they will start bringing their friends into town and they'll get them positions on the council as well. Once they've got a majority on the council, then any money that comes into that local community council will be first funneled into Jewish projects, Jewish synagogues, Jewish-only schools, kosher supermarkets, all sorts of stuff that the Jews want, and they will start depriving the rest of the community, the local community, the Americans, the Australians, the Thai, whoever is there in their local community. They'll start depriving them by funneling all the money into Jewish projects. Then when people get annoyed with it and they think, well, this is fucked up, and they start selling their houses, then they start buying up the houses as well and bringing in their Jewish friends, and they take over the community that way. Within a few years, you've got a Jewish-only council, you've got a Jewish-only community because they've driven everybody out. And you can't stop them, because if you stop them infiltrating, you're anti-Semitic, and they will do things like stage an attack against the synagogue or whatever so they can have more protection and more sympathy in the community to get away with what they're doing. They've got huge enclaves setting up here in Mexico. They've got them setting up in Pisac in Peru. They've got them setting up in Ukraine. They've got them setting up in Patagonia, setting up in Australia. They're already there in the United States. They're there in England. They're there throughout Europe. they're all over the folk, the place, folks. And it's all been done by design. It's a war of deception, and it's been going on for a very long time. And their goal, as I said, is to destroy Amalek and to stop all idol worship. So it's the end of all Indian culture, the end of Peruvian culture, the Mayan culture, Mexican culture, a Christian culture, Hindu culture, anything that is not Judean culture. That's the goal, and that's what they want to do. I haven't even started yet. Yeah, but they got to get everybody tracked and traced, get all these data centers in place, and that's all part of it as well. I mean, it's all to enslave you to the monetary system. They do it by stealth, of course. Like in the UK, they are bringing in whatever it's called. I think they want to bring it in by the end of the year. It's something like the, you know, the Child Safety Act, Online Safety Act, or something like that. It's always Safety Act. It's always in the guise of child safety. They don't want anybody under 16 to be able to log on to social media. Well, how do you stop them? Well, of course, you've got to provide ID in order to get online and log on to social media. Now, as I said, the government won't do it. They'll make X do it. They'll make Facebook do it. They'll make, you know, Reddit or whoever do it. So it isn't the government. It's the platform that's doing it. It's not us. It's them, you know. This is the way they do it. So they want to bring that in by the end of the year. They've already done it in Australia, like with the whole tax returns last year. They recommended that people would be better if they did their tax returns online. And of course, in order to do your tax return online, you had to open a MyGov account, mygov.au, whatever it is, .com.au. And for a start, it's not MyGov, so why would you do that? It's not your government, it's theirs. And it's a corporate system that you really don't want to be part of. But anyway, they tricked people into doing that in Australia last year. So they've already basically got a lot of the digital ID in place already in Australia through tricking them with the tax returns.
654 million our government just committed to expanding Australia's digital ID system. And here's what most Australians don't know. 15 million Australians already have one, not because they signed up for digital ID, but because they needed to lodge their tax return online or access Medicare or Centrelink. They created a MyGov ID account for a specific purpose, and most have no idea it's actually a digital ID or what it's quietly becoming. From December 2026, that same account will connect to your bank, your phone, your internet provider, your healthcare provider, all linked into one centralized government-connected system. You didn't sign up for that. You signed up to lodge your tax return. And now the goalposts have moved without your consent, without a public vote. The EU just mandated that all 27 member states offer a digital identity wallet to every citizen by the end of 2026. Your driver's license, your bank account, your medical records, your identity, all in one app. Australia is spending $654 million building its own version. We can all see the writing on the wall. When everything that identifies you sits inside one centralised system and private companies can access that system, who controls that data? Who decides who can see it and what happens when the system gets breached? Because data breaches don't ask for permission. This is just another decision being built around Australians without a single public vote. Under a direct democracy, Australians could vote on whether they want this system expanded this way, whether they want taxpayer money wasted on systems they never signed up to. Instead, it's already being built. Did you know your MyGov ID has become a digital ID?
Yeah, they're very sneaky the way they do things, folks. They're sneaky with everything. Something else that they're doing, actually, the Australian government, which I would suggest is quite sneaky, is on the 27th of this month, 27th of July, which I believe is Monday. I think that's right, Monday, yeah? On the 27th of July in Australia at 2 p.m., wherever you happen to be in Australia, they are sending out what they are deeming to be an alert signal to alert you of earthquakes or volcanoes or invasions or pending UFO crashes. Who freaking knows, folks? Like, as if they need an alert system in Australia. They don't. There's no earthquakes. I mean, occasionally you'll have a little one, a little 4.2 rumble or some rubbish once every maybe 50 years, you know. Like, there's nothing that goes on in Australia. There's no active volcanoes. There's nothing that you need an alert warning system for. It's trying to alert you to an invasion or something. But, you know, they might use it for, you know, COVID or something like that, you know, just to alert you that there's a new pandemic and you need to lock down, whatever. But they're sending out an alert warning to everybody's cell phone at 2 p.m. on the 27th of this month, which is like 3 days from now. So turn your phones off. I highly recommend you and everybody you know, turn your phone off at 2:05. And then you can turn it back on at 2:05. But make sure your phone is switched off at 2 p.m. on July 27th, this month. It's about 4 days from now, 3 or 4 days from now, whenever this video gets posted. I don't know what the date is today. I think Sunday is the 26th, so it would be Monday. And I think today is Wednesday. So, yeah. 3 or 4 days from now, folks, there will be an alert go out to Australian phones. Turn your phone off. Don't be part of it. Because what they're kind of doing is they're showing you they can access your phone whenever they want. I think it will be a way to pinpoint everybody's location as well. Whatever it is that they're up to, you don't want to do it because you don't want to do anything the government wants you to do. Trust me on this. Look at their track record. They don't have anything good in mind, folks. They never have your best intentions at heart with anything they do. So I would say do not become part of their warning system, their alert system. Turn your phone off at 5 minutes to 2 p.m. Turn your phone off on the 27th. Turn it back on at 5 past. And I'm sure you can be without your phone for 10 minutes, you know. But just make sure it's turned off at 2 p.m. If you've got a Faraday cage, even put it in a Faraday cage. Put it in the fridge or put it in your microwave or something. Just leave it somewhere, switch it off, put it in a Faraday cage and just leave it there for 10 minutes or half an hour or all day or for the rest of your life or whatever you like. But yeah, don't get involved, folks. Just don't participate. See, all of this stuff they're rolling out, it all depends on our participation. That's the trick. The data centers, everything they're doing with this smart grid. If you don't participate, and you've got to have the app to do this, you've got to have the app to do that. As soon as you go into a shop and it tells you, oh, just get our app, just tell them, fuck off and walk out of the shop. Go to a different shop. It's crazy. Imagine how many apps people must have on their phones, which track everything they do, has their account on everything. You know, their whole record of everything they've done with that app. You know, it's just crazy that people would even do this. Nacha. Nacha, Ben. And something else they can do with it, folks, is they can erase you. They can erase all your data. They can erase your identity. If you put too much of your identity online, they can simply delete you whenever they want. They can stop your access to everything. Now, when they confiscate people's cell phones, imagine if you do everything. You do your banking, you pay for stuff, you do all your online stuff, you do your mail, you do everything with your cell phone. And then they confiscate your cell phone because some video that you've got on there or I mean, they confiscated my cell phone when I went back to Australia because of a video that someone sent me on WhatsApp. It was a message that I hadn't even opened yet on WhatsApp. And someone sent it to me while I was in transit. So the cops got my phone. They opened WhatsApp. They opened that message and downloaded the video and said, this is a reference to the Melbourne synagogue bombing. Shows damage from a terror attack, therefore you've got terrorist material on your phone, so we're confiscating your phone. I didn't even download the message. They did, you know? So imagine if you're someone who does everything on your phone. Once they take that, what do you do from there? How do you get home? How do you get an Uber? How do you get access to your finances? How do you do send a message to anyone to say, hey, I'm trapped at the airport, come and pick me up, or anything like that? I mean, that's kind of what they do with people. That's kind of what they were hoping to do with me. But they were fucking stupid and didn't see my laptop. I confiscated my phone, but didn't see my laptop, which had 10 times more stuff on it than my phone did. Actually had stuff that they probably would have arrested me for on that laptop, but they didn't see it in the laptop bag. Crazy. That's how spirit works, you know. Nacho, Ben. She's down there bullying this big dog. A big dog down there, like 10 times the size of her. There's little Nacho down there. I don't know if you can see her. There's that big dog over there. She's down there harassing it. Look at this. Look, she's going for it. They've just got so much courage, these little chihuahuas. They just don't back down. Nacho, it's all good, doll. But anyway. Yeah, I don't even know where I was going, what I was saying. But yeah, they didn't see my laptop. But imagine the difficulty that they put people through and they just take your phone. But the only reason they can do this is because so many people are dependent upon these things. That's why I just don't do anything on phone. Doesn't matter if they take my phone. You know, I do most of my stuff on a computer at home. I have a laptop with me when I travel because it's a necessity. But even if they take that, well, it's all on my big computer at home. It's all stored in safe places on drives and all sorts of stuff. So it doesn't really matter. Oh, Andrew Tate arrest as well. Did you see that? What the fuck happened with that? I mean, we're told that it's because of some movie of him beating up some girl when he was younger. I don't know. Plausible deniability with all video evidence now. Hard to tell. But Andrew Tate's arrest video, did you see that? I mean, for a start, I don't know why a heterosexual man would actually dress that way. But there's one part where he turns and you see the front half of his left foot disappear. You can see the outline, the shape of where it is. It looks like it's got a concrete glove over the front of it, you know, like the same colour as the concrete. And then there was another angle of the arrest where a police officer disappears in mid-frame. So was he really arrested, or is that just all more AI slop? Or do they just do that on purpose to make you think it's AI slop? I mean, whatever. And if you're going to arrest Andrew Tate for that, why have there been no arrests from the Epstein files? What, are you doing this to make us believe that you actually give a shit about pedophiles and what they do to children? Seriously? Because we know that you don't, because if you did, you wouldn't have Epstein's girlfriend's dad publishing the freaking textbooks for high school and getting all the high school yearbooks, and all these people would be arrested. So we know you don't give a shit about that. So now, what's all this theatrical arrest of Andrew Tate? Does it actually mean anything? You know, meanwhile, you're genociding Gaza and the war in Iran is on and it's off and it's on and it's off. Trump is still pounding the shit out of Iran. Iran has hit desalination plants across Kuwait and other places. I think there's only one or two plants left in Kuwait. And they've actually put out a warning for the people of Israel to leave. It's an interesting thing. I mean, I've often said many times on these reports, is Israel seriously at war with Iran, or is Iran seriously at war with Israel? I mean, it seems to be America bombing Iran and not Israel. Israel keeps threatening that they're going to get involved again. Well, hang on, it's your war. You started it. And now suddenly the United States is in there bombing the shit out of Iran. And all Iran's doing is hitting US bases. It's not attacking Israel. I said, well, you know, if Iran is seriously attacking Israel, Israel shouldn't be there anymore. It's the size of New Jersey. It would have been simple to take it out. But the thing is, if they are actually Muslims, and it is actually a Muslim faith that they're following, then the murder of civilians is against Muslim faith. I know you don't believe this, because most of the people out there, many of the people listening, have bought into all the Zionist propaganda that Muslim is a cult of death and they just rape, pillage and plunder everywhere they go. Well, no, they don't. They actually treat women like royalty. And they don't rape women. Even the October 7th stuff, I mean, this was all set up and staged by Israel. A lot of the hostages, a lot of the people in the houses where Hamas came, they said, no, they treated us very well. I was expecting to be raped and beaten and abused, and they actually gave me a hijab to wear to cover myself up and said, don't worry, we're not going to hurt you, we're Muslims. We actually revere women, and it's against Muslim law to kill women and children, even in warfare, which would explain why they have not, sorry, itchy nose, itchy moustache, would explain why they have not yet bombed the shit out of Tel Aviv. Because Mossad bases, a lot of the military bases are actually in central Tel Aviv. You know, Israel uses human beings as human shields. That's why it puts all of its military bases in populated areas, because then if Iran strikes these areas, it can accuse them of targeting civilian infrastructure when they're not. It's where they put their military bases. That's another thing as well, you know, with the doublespeak of Israel. They tell you that the Palestinians want their children to die as martyrs, that they hold their children up for you to shoot them. And they use their children as human shields. But if the children actually, if this was the purpose, if they wanted their children to die, why would you even be calling them human shields? Why would they care? I mean, none of it makes sense. If you really look at their narrative of why the Palestinians use their babies as human shields, none of it makes sense. If they wanted them to die, why would they be using them as shields? They wouldn't be shields. It's crazy. Israel actually uses Palestinian children as human shields. It ties them to the front of vehicles, and it uses them as human shields to go in and raid Palestinian villages. How would that work if the Palestinians want their children to be human shields and want them to be sacrificed? Why would the Israelis bother using them as human shields to protect themselves from the Palestinians? Doesn't make sense. It wouldn't work if the Palestinians actually wanted their kids to die. You know, it's unbelievable, the doublespeak and the bullshit that the Israelis put everything through. But you've got to be really careful letting these people into your country in any form of settlements, folks. These people are like a cancer of the earth, like a cancer of consciousness. And we really need to pay attention to what's happening. We really do. And we have to realize that what's pushing the whole thing, again, it's our compliance. We have a choice here. Like everything Alec Karp is doing and Peter Thiel with Palantir, all this crap, all of this depends on your compliance. It depends on you having their apps on your phone. It depends on you taking this phone with you everywhere you go. You don't need to. If you need to just have transport or just contact, then just take a flip phone out with you if you really need that. But don't take a smartphone with you everywhere you go. Don't take all these ear pods and smart devices with you everywhere you go. This is what is feeding Palantir. I've even said, people who are activists and doing all this stuff on cell phones online, all you're doing is feeding data to Palantir. Stop it. Every time you shop with a credit card, you're feeding data to Palantir. Stop it. Even if you've got to use a credit card to get bus tickets or train tickets or whatever, I don't know, buy a season ticket and just use that one ticket over and over again, whatever. But don't take your credit card with you everywhere you go. Even the magnetic strip on the credit card, I mean, they can sniff that out as you walk past. You know, they can sniff out everything, folks, everything that you're doing, everywhere you're going, if you use their technology to run your life with. And that's the thing, is that most people use it to run their lives, and this is why it's so important for us to stop complying. And like I said, I think this is ancient. This goes way, way back. I think this is why I was so against it when I was young, when I was really, really little. And I used to ask my teddy bear to tell God that he'd put me onto the wrong world, and that could he please put me back onto the other world where people didn't think they could own the land. Yeah, and all of this is determined by our pushback, how much we're prepared to push back against this, folks. It's up to us. And we're at such an important time in history. We really are. Yeah, and it's so obvious who's in control. And Trump was saying recently, like China, the reason he lost the election back in 2016 or something. Chinese interference in American politics, he's saying. Yeah, that really looks like there's a lot of Chinese interference. But anyway, folks, look, I think that's about all I've got to say. Nacha, come on, leave him alone. He's 10 times bigger than you. Yeah, I think that's all I've got to say. Again, I'm going to be speaking at Liverpool Co. in a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. In, I think, 3 weeks. Nacha, por favor. Vente, come on. It's about 3 weeks away, I think. That's going to be good. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to getting back here to Mexico after that as well. Looking forward to actually getting started, getting a little cabin here set up. Nacha, vente, por favor, come on. A dear little dog. She's very brave, but noisy. And looking forward to seeing what the world is going to bring. You know, when things do go pear-shaped and there are robots and shit come out, folks, robot dogs. I said before, there's a little trick you get sump oil. Next time you get an oil change in your car, keep your sump oil, your old oil. You know, 4 litres of sump oil, thereabouts. Mix with it like 1 litre of black gloss paint and maybe 2 cups of fine sand. Mix it all together and create these balloons, like, you know, baseball size balloons, and use them. You can throw these at robot dogs or even robot people, and the black paint and the oil soaks in and the sand gets in, grinds up all the parts, it just destroys them. You can use this with riot police using the turtle outfits, jams up all their machine guns, jams up all their turtle outfits. They all get scratched from the sand and stuff, and the paint and the oil and the sand, it's impossible to clean them. They have to be thrown away. So it's something very simple, but it's kind of a last line of defense against a robot army or a police force armed with automatic weapons and dressed in black Kevlar and those, you know, plastic Kevlar turtle suits that they wear. It's a great defense against robot dogs. I mean, you can drop them from the top of buildings. You can throw them from a distance. All sorts of ways you can use these things, but they're sort of a defense technique that almost anybody can use. May come in handy in the future just to have that type of information. I mean, maybe you could even set up some sort of a trap. So if you had a bunch of people walking up a certain place, if you had a robot army walking up a driveway, for example, you know, a bunch of robot cops, you could just release something that would dump a whole bunch of this stuff on them. Who knows? I mean, you could set up all sorts of ways of using this. Kind of like the pouring hot oil down from the castle walls, you know, in the old siege movies and stuff that you used to see, you know, Lord of the Rings and stuff. Yeah, but I don't think I've got much more to say. There is one thing. I did find out just the other day that Laura Loomer is actually on the BitChute board as one of the BitChute advisors. When I found out about this, I was absolutely horrified. We have a psychopath in an advisory position on BitChute. I mean, she's a self-professed Zionist, and if you're a Zionist, you're a psychopath. It's as simple as that. It isn't just about the Jews having a homeland. It's about fake Jews stealing a place for a homeland and genociding the population that lives there. The Jews, modern Jews, have no connection whatsoever to the ancient Israelites. They have no connection to the land of Israel. So if you're a Zionist, you're a psychopath. I was horrified when I found out Laura Loomer has actually been welcomed onto the advisory board. I was actually offered a position on the board as well. Naturally, well, I was told, Ray said to me, you could have a position on the board as well if you want. And I said, no, because I will not be on a board that would include someone like Laura Loomer on that board. It actually caused me to lose a lot of faith in BitChute as a free speech platform. Now, I think it's going to be infiltrated. If this is the way it's going, well, then it's going to spark the beginning of the end of BitChute. I found out that she has actually been on the board since January 2025, which is kind of freaky. And I feel kind of guilty even uploading to BitChute anymore, knowing that Laura Loomer is involved. I emailed Ray and he said, it's about free speech and it shows that we're completely open. No, it doesn't. I mean, you can give Laura Loomer a channel, not a problem, but you don't have a psychopathic Zionist, someone who promotes child murder, as an advisor on any platform. What you do is you spit in the face of these people and you tell them to go live in a fucking storm drain where they belong, crawl back into the sewer and die there, as you should do. That's what you say to someone like Pig Loomer. You don't bring her onto the advisory board. So yeah, I guess I'm going to be looking for another place to upload videos. There was a really good video platform that a guy started about a year ago, and it was really good and probably the best looking video platform I've seen. And just as I was about to start uploading to it and actually using this platform, he shut it down because apparently no one had been using it and it was costing him money to run it. He didn't get any patronage. He didn't get anyone wanting to be involved, which is really sad because it was a great platform. So I can't remember what it was called, but it was really good. But yeah, I'm going to be looking for another platform and try to move away from BitChute a little bit. I mean, I can't in all conscience be involved with a platform that has a psychopath who supports child murder on the advisory board under the pretext of free speech. So I'll just have to see what happens with that from here on. But anyway, folks, look, yeah, I'm going to leave it there for now. Do stay safe through all this and pay attention. Realize that it all depends on our compliance. And if people can just stop complying, then we got this. We just have to be aware of that. So, yeah. But it's coming down to the wire, it really is. Like, people need to see what's going on and they need to prepare for it. Get out of the cities as much as you can. Cities are kill boxes. That's why they set them up the way they did, because they wanted people to move into cities because they're kill boxes. It's just a way of getting rid of people. There's no way for people to really survive in the city once they stop the supply chain, once they break it all down. There's no way to really survive. So these are very dangerous places to be, unless you really have something set up. I mean, there are people that know their way around a city, that know where they can get supplies and just know how to survive on the street. And you're really going to need those sorts of skills soon. And just be prepared for what's coming, folks. Voila. Yeah, just be prepared for what's coming. And pay attention. But thank you to all the people who sent me so many kind emails, so many kind words. Thank you to all the people who helped me out getting Omar out of Dubai. Things are looking really bad in Dubai and all of the Gulf states. And who knows, we may see an escalation whereby we see more attacks against Israel as well. And I know we'd all like to see that, but the problem is that they've already fanned out around the world. It doesn't really matter. I don't think Israel was ever meant to survive. Israel was just put there in order to destabilize the Middle East, to create this conflict, the main purpose being to drive migrants into the West, and this has already been achieved. And now Israel is going to all these countries, setting up its own little secluded enclave, so that's going to be the control area once it all turns to shit in all these countries and all the Muslims and the locals kill each other off and it all turns into complete lawlessness, they're going to have their little enclave and their little police and they're going to be able to come out and save the day for everybody. This is part of the plan, and you will do what you're told or you will be eliminated as a terrorist, because of course if you're standing against Israel, that means you and your entire family and everything that ever existed that belonged to you must be destroyed. That's the way they think. So pay attention, folks. Pay attention. You know, the people need to stand up and stop this happening, and the best way to do it is to refuse to comply. Refuse to comply with any of the technology, and do not accept these people with small hats into your community. Tell them all to fuck off. And if the politicians don't accept that, then you need to replace your politicians. I mean, now's the time, if there was ever a time on earth that all of our governments need to be replaced, it's now, folks. The time is now. I firmly believe it can be done peacefully. I think there's enough people who feel the same way. There's lots of meetings going on in the forest, in Canada and in the United States, and I would suspect in Australia as well, where people are meeting, they're leaving their cell phones at home and they're going and meeting in person, and they are planning strategies by means of which they can reclaim their countries.
Hi there. Since the start of the guest worker migrations to Northern Europe around the 1960s, each time war broke loose anywhere in the world, we kept sending the refugees to Europe. But what if I told you these mass migrations were all planned? This displacement, replacement, and genetic erasure of European native populations has always been EU policy. What is now called a conspiracy theory, the so-called Kalergi plan to replace Europeans, was once the newest fashion among the European nobility of the 1920s. It was a plan popularized by the half-Austrian, half-Japanese nobleman called Richard von Kaldenhove Kalergi. Kalergi, for short, was the founder of the Pan-European Union, the predecessor to the EU, the man who contributed the blue background to the EU's present flag, and who handpicked the EU's present anthem, Beethoven's Ode to Joy. Son of a charming Japanese mother, Kalergi also first introduced the idea of a monetary union for Europe, and it was his idea to coin the minting of a European currency, now called the euro. As a high-ranking member of the Freemasons, Kalergi had access to Europe's royal rich. It was Baron Louis de Rothschild who introduced Kalergi to Max Warburg, a Jewish banker who put in 60,000 Deutschmarks to fund the first steps of the Pan-European Union. The European Union basically is a Jewish-funded project. For 49 years, Kalergi then presided over the Union's Central Council, and in 1950, he received the first Charlemagne Award for his unifying efforts, a prize also awarded to Germany's Angela Merkel in 2008. Say what you want about me, but you cannot deny that Mr. von Kaldenhove Kalergi was extremely influential. This half-Japanese man was the founding father of the European Union, and now that his political and economic dreams have all been realized, perhaps we should be careful to dismiss his racial ideas as something controversial. Kalergi's racial ideas are being implemented, and have been for over a century, except we European common folk aren't supposed to know about it, because it might upset us. Kalergi, for example, wrote extensively about his friends in his 1925 book, Practical Idealism. On page 27 of the first edition, he wrote, "Insofar Europa is Christian, she is Jewish. Insofar Europa is moral, she is Jewish. Nearly the entire European ethic is rooted in Judaism. In the East, the Chinese people are the ethical par excellence. In the West, the Jewish people." On page 28, "The strength of the Jewish character combined with its mental clarity predestines the Jews to be the leaders of urban humanity." And on page 33, we get to read something we really weren't supposed to hear about. "The battle between capitalism and communism over the legacy of Europe's blood nobility is a battle between heathen and Christian minds. The generals of both parties, meaning capitalist and communist, were recruited from Europe's race of spiritual leaders, Jewry. Mind you, these are quotes from his book. On page 50, Kalergi further stresses that Europe's old feudal nobility has indeed been replaced by this new urban nobility. And on page 51, he confirms that Judaism is the lap from which Europe's new spiritual nobility emerges. No wonder this book is out of print. You see, this book wasn't meant to be read by a commoner like me. It was written and intended for Europe's new nobility. By the way, I have a riddle for you. How is it that Kalergi could be so open about Jewish supremacy, writing before the Second World War, but after the war, all of a sudden, everything had to be done in secret? What Kalergi called the feudal or blood nobility, also called the sword nobility or the fighting nobility, were in fact the old Germanic, Celtic, and Slavic clans that used to control Northern Europe. But they, meaning our people, have been defeated by the new urban nobility, namely by playing both sides of the capitalist and communist movements. At least Kalergi thought so. Driven by fear, this European nobility embraced the Kalergi plan because it saw in the Soviet Union a grave threat. They believed, for example, far-seeing as they were, that European unification was going to be necessary to thwart a Russian invasion and Russia's subsequent world domination. Or perhaps both sides, Russia and Europe, were cleverly played again. Either way, nationalist tendencies within Europe came to be seen as a threat to European stability. It's the same story we keep hearing today. In principle, I do support some sort of banner for Europeans to unite themselves under, but it's not the European Union, this urban-centric, anti-rural dystopia that now threatens to erase native European stock for the sole reason that our urban elites are afraid that our suppressed fighting spirit might one day resurface to overthrow them. Again, I'm not making that up. Kalergi said so himself on page 54 of his book, namely that in a more peaceful Europe of the future, the nobility will have to be stripped of its warlike character and have it replaced with a priestly demeanor. A pacified and socialized West will no longer need rulers and masters, only leaders, educators, and examples. I'd add influencers to that list, since Instagram sexuals now seem to be telling us how to live nowadays. We old stock Europeans apparently have to be pacified by mass immigration, mass miscegenation, and mass media manipulation until the war strain has been bred out of us. Our complete and total domestication is the end goal. Again, it was Kalergi who said so on page 55. The races and the classes, as we know them today, will disappear. Kalergi thought the mixed race of the future was the highest possible ideal for Europeans, so that the Jewish element in this mixture could come to, and I quote, its fullest development, as though Jews were a sort of mental race that spreads through physical hosts. I quote again, the European man of the future will be of mixed race. Today's races and classes will disappear owing to the disappearing of nations, time, and prejudice. The Eurasian Negroid race of the future, similar in its outward appearance to the ancient Egyptians, will replace the diversity of peoples with a diversity of individuals. A diversity of individuals? Ah, now you know why Jordan Peterson, the psychologist, is pushing radical individualism so hard. He doesn't want men of old European stock to unite as feudal clans to fight their urban oppressors. You can see my other video about that, titled Family First. The genetic erasure of Europe's natives then is the European Union's endgame, and has been from day one. No wonder big tech and big media are pushing the LGBT agenda so hard on white men, while simultaneously promoting mixed-race relationships for white women. Armies of single immigrant males are supposed to fertilize Europa with their backward ways, and our urban elites seem to think they'll be able to educate the mongrels that come from such an act of genocide. I think they may be suffering from a little hubris there. It is the white man, after all, who represents the potential last line of defense against the genocide of his people, and that is why I made this video. Because I'm sick and tired of these disgusting urban animals in charge of the West nowadays, who think they have become my new nobility. They have not. It is time for us men of the West who prefer to live and die by the sword, to start doing something about this urban cancer consuming the earth. Firstly, by spreading the word, and secondly, by rallying men of European stock into becoming our so-called elite's worst fucking nightmare.
And I think this is happening all over, and it's high time, folks. So yeah, get involved, pay attention, get involved. And if you see these sorts of movements springing up, do support them, because we're in a time of clear and present danger, folks, and this system needs to be stopped, and so do those people who are running us into the ground. All the stuff that they've planned to do to genocide the people of Europe, they're doing it, and this time we stopped it because we are the only ones who can. But anyway, folks, I'll leave it there for now. Next time I bring you a report, it'll probably be like a week or 10 days from now, and I will be in probably Croatia next time you see or hear me. And for those who are coming to Liverpool, I look forward to seeing you there. And please take care until then, folks. In Lakesh.
And it's not as if we didn't know how our gallant Soviet ally would behave before we began our effort to destroy Hitler and his forces. Our government knew what the communists had done in Ukraine. Our government knew about the mass arrests and executions in the Soviet Union. And before we crossed the English Channel to invade Europe, we knew about the mass executions of Polish officers by the Reds at Katyn and elsewhere. And yet, we allied ourselves with the mass murderers. We helped the mass murderers and mass rapists murder and rape millions of more Europeans. And so the claim that we were going to war to fight evil is simply a lie. The Second World War was not a good war. It was not a moral war. It was the most atrocious war of modern times. And we were on the side of those committing nearly all of the atrocities during that war. We were deliberately on the side of evil. And there is just one reason that we fought on the side of evil. It was because that was the Jewish side. In the years before the war, Hitler wasn't rounding up people by the thousands and shooting them the way the communists were. Hitler wasn't shooting anybody. His SS troops weren't raping or terrorizing anyone either. Hitler was doing one thing which resulted in a huge, lying, hate propaganda effort against him from Hollywood. That one thing was Hitler's campaign to break the grip of the Jews on Germany. In Germany, Hitler took the news and entertainment media away from the Jews. He kicked them out of the legal profession, which they had monopolized. He kicked them out of the teaching profession, where they had been pumping their ideas into the heads of German children. And Hitler did all of this peacefully, non-violently. He didn't round up Jews and shoot them. He simply made it illegal for them to own German newspapers and German radio stations. He made it illegal for them to practice law or to teach in German schools. And so the Jews were leaving Germany. Between 1933 and 1939, two-thirds of the Jews in Germany immigrated. At the same time, the Jewish commissars in the Soviet Union were butchering millions of people. But the hate propaganda coming out of Hollywood was entirely anti-German, not anti-Soviet. The Jews' only concern was the welfare of their fellow Jews. They didn't care how many Russians or Ukrainians were murdered, but they screeched at the top of their lungs when Hitler took the German media away from them. And they lied to the American people about what was happening in Europe. They lied in order to make us hate the Germans the way they did. When a Jew assassinated a German diplomat in Paris in 1938, and the German people reacted by smashing up Jewish department stores and synagogues in several German cities, the Jewish news media in the United States reported the incident as if Jews were being massacred wholesale in Germany. That was the famous Kristallnacht, which the Jews still continue to remind us of every year in order to milk a little more sympathy from us. The picture of Germany painted by Jewish hate propaganda in the United States during the years preceding the Second World War was a complete distortion of reality. Americans were told that Germans lived in constant fear of the Gestapo and the SS, that Hitler was a madman who terrorized the German people and who fell to the floor and chewed the edge of his carpet when he became angry. Americans were told that Germany was a land of concentration camps and barbed wire and police dogs. Our invasion of Germany was to be a liberation of the German people from the tyrannical rule of Hitler and the SS. That's actually the word the Jewish propagandists used to describe the American and Soviet terror bombing, rape, and dismemberment of Germany. Liberation. The American and Soviet invaders were to be the liberators. And so the image of Germany most Americans had was the Jewish image of a land of terror and fear and brutality and repression controlled by Hitler's SS automatons, a land which needed to be liberated and which was a deadly menace to America. The hate propagandists of Hollywood lied us into the most murderous and destructive war of all time solely because they hated the Germans and they wanted us to destroy the Germans for them. And they have maintained their pre-war lies even to this day. Their portrayal of Hitler as a crazed carpet chewer and the SS as a gang of sadistic thugs. And they have added to this their post-war hate propaganda of gas chambers and of lampshades and soap supposedly made from the bodies of murdered Jews. Most Americans still believe that their fathers or grandfathers liberated Germany and saved the world. They still believe that the Second World War was a necessary war and a good war. And the reason they believe it is that they have seen hundreds of Hollywood films and television shows which have repeated these same lies to them over and over and over again. And no public figure has ever had the courage or honesty to contradict them. We're still hearing the same lies in films like Steven Spielberg's Saving Private Ryan and in the reviews of that film in the controlled media. Americans as liberators. The fact is that Hollywood's lies about Germany led to millions of white Americans and Europeans being slaughtered solely for the sake of punishing the Germans for throwing the Jews out of Germany. And we are put at a great disadvantage even today by those same lies because they prevent so many of us from examining the past honestly. And if we cannot understand what happened in the past, we are much less likely to choose a wise course into the future.